Hello and welcome to this episode, Meet the Entrepreneur, brought to you by Invest Africa Insights. The COVID-19 pandemic has highlighted the underlying weakness of Africa's healthcare supply chains. Across the continent, up to 70 to 90% of drugs are imported, while transport bottlenecks hinder supply and push up prices for consumers. In the rush for COVID-19 vaccines and treatments, many countries have prioritised their own, and the unsustainability of Africa's approach has been exposed. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by a founder whose company has been working to address these structural issues since well before the pandemic, starting in 2015. Michael Morland, co-founder and CEO of Field Intelligence. Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Eleanor. Good morning.
So I've just touched very briefly on some of the complexities in Africa's healthcare sector. And you established Field Intelligence, as you've said, to make Africa's pharma supply chain radically simple. Last year, you supplied 580,000 medicines, supporting over 300 pharmacies and 1.2 million patients. So it must be an interesting time for you, having been working on these issues for a few years, to have this sort of sudden interest as a result of the challenges of the pandemic. So if you, to kick us off, if you sort of cast yourself back to 2015 when you started out, what did Africa's pharma supply chain look like then? And what were the real challenges there that you felt that you could solve?
Well, yeah, things were very different back in 2015, and not just in the health system, but I think in the technology ecosystem too. When we began Field, it was actually to focus on helping digitize and optimize the government-run public health supply chains. There was a big movement then, donors and national governments, to really strengthen supply chain. And so I think the focus on supply chain from those in the health sector has been really clear for a decade now, even. And so we started Field as a way to get in there and solve some important technology challenges, the ability to extend digital processes end to end, give great visibility to the delivery of healthcare all the way out to the patient. And in doing so, help integrate the very siloed disease-specific supply chains that exist in Africa, characterized by big HIV programs or malaria programs, but to help think of it as one health system, integrate it, digitize it, bring it into the future, and really use the supply chain to drive access and improvement across the health system. And it was from that vantage point, working with government as a SaaS provider, that we realized that some of those same challenges existed in the private sector for that retail pharmacy, that corner pharmacy that so many depend on, and that we had something really valuable to offer to them too. So we have just continued to find opportunities to bring what we have to offer to the health supply chain, sort of across the health system broadly now.
And so you mentioned there that you've sort of, now that you've increasingly moved into working with pharmacies, and I know you've got a couple of products that are designed for pharmacies to manage their stocks and to manage their supply chain. So perhaps you can just explain briefly, sort of now in 2021, what it is that the Field Intelligence looks like now.
Yeah, so Field is really bridging lots of different worlds here. We are still a SaaS business providing field supply. It's a supply chain management software as a service solution for large health systems to use to run their own supply chains. And then, as you mentioned, we started in 2017 our own supply chain called Shelf Life that individual pharmacies can plug into. They join Shelf Life and they outsource their supply chain to us. We take over the all of the planning, the fulfillment, and the finance, owning the inventory on their shelves until they sell it. So it's our own version of vendor-managed consignment. We call it pay-as-you-sell. And this is really the primary focus for us. When we turned to solve this problem, we realized very quickly just how deep the opportunity was and how clear the need was for this kind of supply chain and finance solution for helping the tens of thousands of pharmacies across the continent, lower their cost to serve, improve availability, improve the range of products they offer to clients and to their patients, and really begin to grow as healthcare providers at the community level.
And I know that, you know, in addition to some of those challenges that you were talking about there, in terms of pricing and supply, another key challenge that pharmacies and or consumers of medicines in some of your markets face sort of is actually trust in the products. And, you know, Nigeria in particular has a significant challenge around counterfeit medicines. So is there anything that you do when you're working with pharmacies to ensure sort of quality across the supply chain? Do you do anything on sort of quality control to improve that trust?
Yeah, absolutely. Although what I'd want to say here is a bit counter narrative. There is absolutely a problem with counterfeits and with substandard medication in Africa. I think the way we talk about it in the popular press, so to speak, media is a little bit misguided in that we've not met a pharmacist yet in our markets that wants to be selling counterfeit drugs, that wants to be hurting their patient. It's also not that difficult to know where to find the correct products and where to find substandard products. So it's not that the pharmacist has a bad intent or simply can't distinguish between this in the vast majority of cases. Instead, we found that this is really a problem of the economics of running the community pharmacy. So, to answer that, I'll explain a little bit about what makes it so challenging to run the community pharmacy, and you can kind of see the implications here that it's a highly fragmented market. The 10 largest retail pharmacy chains, the chain stores in Nigeria, Ghana, and Kenya combined, only have 186 or so different outlets for a population of almost 250 million. So the rest of the population in these markets is served by individual pharmacies who have very little purchasing power, very little access to finance, and struggle with the use of data to run that supply chain and to run their business. And so it puts them in this position where they're writing off a lot from expiries, which is a huge challenge. And it also causes them to stock out, not offer enough. And so at the margin, pushed in a place where it's the difference between offering a product that is already expired and no product, or offering something that maybe only has half the active ingredient than the full active ingredient. At the margin, some pharmacies choose to do the lesser evil here and try to offer something. And so they will make a decision out of sort of economic necessity. And it has tremendously bad effects for patient access and for quality and trust in the health system broadly. But what we've tried to do is simply reset the economics of the community pharmacy and take away those perverse incentives that might edge the marginal pharmacy to do something wrong, and instead make it very easy for them to do the right thing. So in our supply chain, which they plug into, we have an extensive quality management process that is many pages long of documentation and the processes that we undergo to do a complete audit on our suppliers, their ingredients, the products we bring in. We have extensive expiry management. We are in our shops where we're selling our products on a regular basis, spot checking. So we've built the standard sort of best practice quality into our supply chain. But more importantly, we've taken away the incentive through our model for any pharmacist to need to cheat in order to make their business work, which I think is even more important and more systemic than simply just solving the counterfeit thing by itself.
That's really interesting. So would it be fair to say on some level you're offering a sort of access to scale and sort of the ability to act in the market as a larger sort of supplier than you are through consolidation?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a big part of the business model in that we are aggregating demand across this pharmacy network. and are able to, you know, we work for the pharmacies. We enter into a service agreement with them, and then we represent our clients in the market. So no longer are they buying on behalf of themselves, but now we are buying on behalf of over 500 pharmacies, and also have incredible amounts of data and the right kind of system to use those data to find the efficiencies and make sure that we are, as a group, making sure that our clients have the very best access, and in a way, just making it very easy for them to succeed.
And I'm curious, because you know, you mentioned earlier that your roots were working with government, and you know, we've been talking about consolidating supply chains and making sort of a more holistic system, something that sort of makes more sense as a whole. So as Field Intelligence now, as a private company, do you continue to work with governments, and or what role do you see potentially for private tech companies like yourself to work more closely with governments in Africa?
Yeah, absolutely. The by far the largest health providers, and in our world the biggest distributors, are still governments, and I think that's true everywhere. And you really can't have a health system in Africa without the government leading and driving it, and not just on a regulatory sort of rulemaking basis, but they're also driving access for the vast majority of people for a wide array of things that are unavailable or chronically too expensive or out of reach through private channels. And so from our standpoint, working with both is perfectly critical. It's absolutely essential that we are helping and bringing what we can to bear for both sectors. And there's no doubt that it is not easy as a technology provider, as a small company, to become a service provider or to work with government. This is hard anywhere in the world, I think, but it has not been the way it's been done in the past in Africa. And so systems are much more set up for supplying drugs or medical technologies, equipment, devices, but not services. And so the good thing is that with the focus on supply chain and the role sort of finance within public health systems, that's beginning to change. And we've been sort of a big part of that, I think. But yeah, absolutely. There is a huge opportunity in entrepreneurs looking at problems they can help government and public systems solve as well. And in our case, we found that those use cases were not that different from those we found in the public, in the private sector. And so, yeah, I think that there's absolutely a reason to look at both and to look holistically at the way the two interact. Because from the patient standpoint, they just need the care. They just need that care. They need to find it wherever they are, and they need to have access to it in whichever delivery that they as appropriate for them. So I absolutely need to work across both sectors there.
Yeah, and I mentioned a bit in the introduction, you know, that that the pandemic has sort of really brought this issue to the fore, particularly around vaccines, but also around treatments, where, you know, Africa has really sort of struggled in, you know, no small part due to sort of the lack of manufacturing and the fragmentation of pharmaceutical supply chains. And so, you know, in reference to what you were saying about governments there, and, you know, perhaps the beginning of a shift and more sort of openness to services like yourself, Do you expect the challenges of COVID-19 to maybe bring about a change in the government's approach, but also the private sort of operators' approach to pharmaceuticals in Africa?
Yeah, I think we already see it. The use of new private labs plugged into the national COVID surveillance system in Nigeria has been a really bright sign, a way to onboard new capacity into the health system very quickly. Leverage private sector investment to solve a big pressing public health problem is there. You know, I worked in Nigeria and in Liberia during the Ebola outbreak in West Africa some years ago that I'm sure people will remember, and on the ground there. And it was really an all hands on deck kind of approach. And so I think that's like the spirit of everybody joining together to work on these public health sort of societal challenges is there. It's definitely there. I think the challenge is more about sustaining that after the the pressure and the urgency of the emergency is past. More, how do you sustain that energy into the routine, sort of boring system, healthcare delivery that is the lived experience of most people on a day-to-day basis? I think that's more of the challenge that we face coming out of COVID. And, on this point, I think as far as manufacturers go, there's just a tremendous need for more onshoring of development in Africa, of production. And we find that some of the best manufacturers we work with are domestic manufacturers. They have really beloved brands in products that the local clientele really trust. And the challenge is that they struggle from some of the same conditions that the pharmacies struggle with. They also have very poor visibility into what's selling where, what the prices ought to be. They struggle with really big inefficiencies that are baked into the value chain. Huge write-offs from expiration, chronic stockouts where there should be product, just drive the price up everywhere and bring them to market far too expensively. And without being able to afford an enormous field force of marketing sales agents, domestic manufacturers have challenges competing. And so I think that by digitizing and consolidating this very fragmented retail market, we, with Shelf Life, are doing something to bolster the business case for domestic pharmaceutical manufacturers as well, making it easier for them to get to market and build their own businesses.
And just on that point, we've spoken a bit about how you work with pharmacies, but do you have any plans to work with manufacturers on that data point? I mean, I would imagine that you might be building up quite a sort of sophisticated data set about where products are selling. Do you have any plans for that, or are you focused more sort of purely on the pharmacy side?
Yeah, well, our focus is the pharmacy. We see them as the fulcrum of the patient's journey in healthcare, but the pharmacy is just one link in this chain. We have to also ensure that the patient can find that pharmacy and has access to it. We also need to make sure that the supply has its best chances of arriving there as affordably and as reliably as possible. So we have already, of course, begun working with manufacturers on building them a really unique and very value-added kind of route to market this way. And so for exactly the reasons you've suggested, that we've got this real-time point-of-sale data across hundreds of locations with also a full sort of managed route to market. We're providing all of the planning and the fulfillment and the finance. And so making it very easy for them to reach. The next phases for us are about extending this network by adding on the sort of backward and forward, the different players in the value chain, which includes the manufacturers.
And now the other players, large players that have sort of started to wake up to this market are the sort of the larger e-commerce, African e-commerce companies like Jumia and Kenge, and a few of them have started to move into pharmaceuticals. Do you see that as competition? Do you see that as something to work with in the future? What's your sort of approach to those larger e-commerce companies potentially entering this market?
Well, first, I welcome all investment in this market. Honestly, it's been chronically underinvested in relative to the potential, the commercial potential, and the need. And so, I think any and all investment is actually really welcome. It's a huge market. It's really nascent. I think it's far too soon to divide up lines about who's competition, who's not. What I'll say though is that I do believe, and we believe very strongly here, that the pharmacist is an essential health worker in the community, and we are not eager to cut them out of this relationship. I think in settings where there's a chronic a shortage of doctors and nurses, the pharmacies who are there in every community, every corner has got a pharmacy, they provide an outsized amount of care. It's not just dispensing to the patient. It's also guidance and counseling and support And I think this is not to be underestimated. And so our focus has been about empowering that pharmacy and along the way, building our own sort of distributed community-based supply that we can then fulfill in different models. So much like we've seen the US kind of go full circle, now going back to stores for buy online, pick up in store, or fulfill from store, that kind of community-based edge that provides patients the ability to order something online and have it, you know, pick it up directly at the corner or have it delivered in a very, very quick time from a nearby location, or to stop by the pharmacy and have that conversation and do that if that's more convenient. I think that kind of optionality is a real strategic advantage for us. And so focus on the pharmacy, make them successful, but in the process, you know, open up new options for new fulfillment models in the future. So, yeah, I don't think there are any closed doors here for us. The option, you know, the goal here is to provide as many ways to get care to that patient as possible.
Michael, so if we can, I'd love to talk a little bit now about your journey building Field Intelligence into what it is now and your experience fundraising, because, you know, it's a challenging and but absolutely key part of any sort of starting any business. And I know lots of people listening, you know, are eager for sort of any insights into the process they can get. I mean, I know last year you raised your Series A, $3.6 million. So, you know, congratulations on getting that through. Can you talk us perhaps through what the process was like for you? And, you know, particularly if you could speak to yourself, you know, back in 2015 or back when you did your last sort of your funding round, what do you know now that you sort of wish you had known earlier in the process?
Oh boy. so much. You know, I'll start off by saying that this is my, my second business, my second health tech business actually. And I thought I had learned every lesson I was going to learn with the first one. And that has just proven to be also false. So the learning process is continuous. And same thing for my co-founder. It was also his second business. And he thought he had also learned everything. And so I think that there is no sense of having learned all the tricks or anything here. It's much harder than that. But also we're a bit of a unique business in that we went the first 4 years as a profitable business. We funded ourselves, founder funded. We were fortunate enough to be able to put some money from our first businesses. We had both exited and put money into the business. And I'd just start by saying this is not incredibly like useful perhaps for most entrepreneurs who don't have that luxury, but what the ability to go 3-4 years without raising money did is it gave us a lot of time to figure out exactly what the answer is. I think there's a lot of pressure on founders to have the perfect thesis, have the perfect business plan that's going to solve all these problems. And in some markets, that might even be possible. But in a market that is this dynamic and this nascent, in a context as challenging as Africa, as any African market can be, it's ridiculous to think that you've got the answer right away. And what you need is you need the benefit of time to really keep refining. And when you find that thing that can work everywhere, and you really hit upon a very valuable, very scalable use case, then it's time. And I think this is something that we struggle with, making sure that we were ready. So we really took our time and wanted to get it right. Now, the other big thing, of course, is that finding the right investors is critical. The venture market is typically, you know, characterized as, you know, sort of having these short-term funding cycles and a lot of time pressure, and that's true. But again, I think to build the right kind of business in the healthcare system in Africa, you need again time. You're making long-term investments. You have to be finding positive sum growth opportunities, and you have to prove to your clients, and in our case, to the regulators and to our stakeholders, that we're here for the long term. And you really have to find the right capital partners who understand that and are going to stick with you through it all. And so we've been very fortunate in that we were able to find investors who understood the bigger vision, the longer term outlook, and also who understood Africa and understood what it takes to get there. So I guess in terms of advice, who you bring into your business really matters. And I think that alignment for an early stage business couldn't be more important.
And you mentioned there sort of the long term investment in African healthcare, and that you know your sort of long term perspective. So sort of now, you know, you've off the back of your Series A, which you've got in the bank. If you're looking that now at your next sort of 5 to 10 years, where do you see Field Intelligence being in 5 to 10 years time? Where do you hope to see it?
Well, you know, we have big goals, of course. What we found is that this particular mousetrap, the shelf life solution as it is today, is one that it has worked everywhere that we've gone after. The same business model that we run in Lagos is the same one we run in Kano, is the same one we run in Nairobi, is the same one we run in Kisumu. We found something that really fits. And everywhere we've looked, this particular set of services wrapped in this particular business model has worked. And so from our standpoint, job number one is just making it available to as many pharmacies as possible. And so we are on our way to adding the next countries on our roadmap. And in the next 3 years, we have plans and our forecasts. We could be managing supplies at over 10,000 pharmacies across Africa, which would make Shelf Life the largest pharmacy network in the world. Even CVS in the US only has just shy of 10,000. So I think Africa's got the potential for this. I think we've got a business model that can get us there. And I think that we see that this has a positive effect for local businesses. It radically improves the quality and accessibility of care for patients, and the economics work. And so that's the goal number one, is just to make it available across the continent.
And so that's your pay-as-you-sell product, isn't it? Which sort of removes some of the risk for pharmacies of holding on to too much stock.
That's right.
Am I able to ask, are you able to tell us what those next markets in Africa are going to be or are likely to be, or is that under wraps?
I don't think it's under wraps. I think we haven't quite landed on it yet, but we are in Nigeria and we're in Kenya, expanding further in the East Africa community, and in ECOWAS makes a lot of sense. We find very similar regulatory and market conditions, and but of course we are looking beyond. We are very interested in sort of what we can do in North Africa. So it'll be the first to know when we decide.
But it's definitely going to be in Africa. No plans as of yet to maybe take this to other markets, say sort of Asia or somewhere like that.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of interest, actually. A lot of groups reach out from other emerging market settings to try to partner. And I think that that's really interesting for us, not for us as a business to go and operate there, but for us to find the right partners and license out or provide our technology and the processes, I think is really key. The one sort of deep problem we've solved that enables that pay-as-you-sell service to work is that we're solving a few really deep problems. First and foremost, it's the figuring out how much stock needs to be on the shelf every week. So we are doing a tremendous amount of machine learning and really extensive cutting edge kind of demand and supply planning to use all these data that we're gathering, but to really make sure that we're running a very lean supply chain everywhere. And training those models and figuring out how to do this at scale, I think has got a real universal kind of advantage, and the economics that it enables, that we could then take over this really difficult part of running the local pharmacy, take that over for them, also solving financing in the process by selling on consignment, freeing up their cash so they're not tying up their cash on the shelf. All this together we found to be really universal. So who knows? We'll see.
Just before we wrap up, just before I let you go, that was sort of quite a positive outlook for field intelligence. But I also always like to end sort of asking people to give me something that makes them feel sort of hopeful for Africa or in their sector looking forward. So, you know, for healthcare or for the health sector, it's particularly, you know, it's obviously been a particularly challenging sort of 18 months. But as we've sort of talked about a bit, you know, there's maybe some sort of hope that some of that disruption could bring about some longer term changes, because lots of these issues were structural, you know, long before the pandemic. So for you, what is it that makes you feel most hopeful sort of in African healthcare or in African tech looking to the future?
Well, I think as an entrepreneur, especially as one who sort of committed his career to entrepreneurship, the unreasonable optimism is kind of baked into I feel like it's almost dangerous sometimes to be so optimistic, but I see so many bright spots despite the headlines sometimes. The response to to COVID has been actually really impressive on the ground. I mean, of course, it's struggled with lack of access to tests and vaccines and hospital beds, and that's a capacity issue. But in terms of the processes and the professionalism of the response and the quality of the science, I think it's been really great. But looking out broadly, Nigeria and Kenya, where we are, one of the things that gives me a lot of hope is there are so many young pharmacists coming out of school, coming back from residencies abroad, and looking to start a pharmacy and are trying to do so in ways that change what that means. How can they provide way more value to their patients? How can they build a business that gets it off the ground and scales it? So I see this this new generation of healthcare professionals on the continent really hungry to participate in this adjacent technology boom that we're seeing, and really want to connect the health sector to fintech and to the other sort of emerging technology sectors in a way that builds out the ecosystems of both. And I think that eagerness, it extends beyond field. You know, we see this every day, that the ecosystem itself is growing so quickly. There are new tools and there are new things possible that just weren't possible a year ago. And this is really being driven by this fantastic sort of young generation of Africans that we're very happy to be a part of and support. So I see plenty of reasons to be optimistic and bullish on the opportunity.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to come on today.
Thank you for having me. It's great.
Now, if people would like to know some more about Field, there will be some links in the description. So do follow those to the website, and they can also find you on Twitter and on LinkedIn. And those will all be in the description of the episode if anyone would like to learn a bit more.
Thanks so much, Eleanor.
Bye. Thanks, Michael.